Local news, local issues, local talk. This is the KUMA Coffee Hour on News Radio FM 96.5, 1290 KUMA.
Thanks for joining us on a Tuesday. The KUMA Coffee Hour coming up in just a moment. I'll be talking to Pendleton Police Chief Chuck Byram. Much to discuss, and that conversation will begin right after these words.
It might be a little tricky to fly in and out of Walla Walla right now with the Alaska Air flight schedule change, but if you like to sleep in and have a relaxing morning before your flight, you will love the midday flight time. You will still have good flight connections at SeaTac for wherever your journey takes you. So, purchase your ticket today at alaskaair.com, pack your bags, and enjoy your flight from the Walla Walla Regional Airport. Need a little more incentive? Free parking. Fly Walla Walla.
Let's get back to the area's only live and local morning show, the KUMA Coffee Hour, on News Radio FM 96.5, 1290 KUMA.
Good morning and thanks for joining us. Dan Chessman here with the KUMA Coffee Hour. In studio this morning with me is Pendleton Police Chief Chuck Byram. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Dan. How are you?
I'm great. And it's the last day of January. We'll get into how January shaped up for the department in a moment. But first, are there any recent crimes or trends in crimes that you want to report this morning?
Well, I think that there's a couple things that we can talk about, one of which happened on January 29th at about 2:30 p.m. And quite honestly, this just goes back to the whole thing where we need eyes and ears out there from the residents of Pendleton or people visiting that when they see something that they don't think is right, they need to say something. And this is exactly what happened in this case. So at about 2:30 p.m. in the 400 block of Southwest Haley Avenue, a resident down there saw something what he deemed to be suspicious. Two people, younger people, running away from a vehicle. Don't know why they were running away, but he deemed that it was suspicious. So we came down, we started the investigation. We went over to the vehicle, which was a Washington-plated vehicle, and determined that it was stolen out of Walla Walla. And through the course of the investigation, the officer was able to talk to witnesses and able to locate the two subjects, or who we believe are the two subjects, coming out of a residence in the 600 block of Southwest 4th Street who were associated with that vehicle. One of which being Kiefer Robinson, who did have warrants, and he was taken into custody along with his co-conspirator, who we believe to be Isabel Shoeships. Once we took them into custody, we found that Mr. Robinson had a loaded .22 caliber handgun on his person. He's a felon. So they were both lodged for UUMV conspiracy, and Mr. Robinson was lodged for the felon in possession of the handgun. So overall, that was good. What we need from our citizenry. We need them to report those things to us so that we can come down and take a look. Now, it doesn't always turn out like that, obviously. I mean, most of the times, you know, it's something that's relatively easily explained and not criminal in nature. However, in this one, it was criminal in nature. And person that reported it could have easily just disregarded it as nothing and not called us. And therefore, nothing probably would have happened or came of it. So we really thank our citizens for doing that, and especially in this case, it wouldn't have happened without that report to kick it off.
And then can you talk about what happened out in front of Rainbow yesterday?
Yeah, so we responded at about 2:30 along with Pendleton Fire and Ambulance to a report of a vehicle versus pedestrian motor vehicle collision at the intersection of Court and Main Street. Upon arrival, there was a female on the ground being tended to, and medics ended up transporting her to St. Anthony Hospital for facial injuries, bumps, bruises, stuff like that. Through the course of the investigation, the officers learned that the driver of the vehicle was making a left turn off of Court onto Main Street while the female was in the crosswalk and had the green light, and ended up striking her. So he was cited for obviously the violation of allowing people to go through the crosswalk, or not allowing the person to go through the crosswalk in this instance. As of this date and time, I do not have an updated condition on the female, but I knew that she was going to be kept for evaluation just due to the potential head injury aspect of it.
All right. And looking back at January, how did it shape up? Did it shape up to be a busy month for your department?
Well, it wasn't so much January, but what I do in starting January is I start going over the last year's totals of everything based on our accreditation standards and our policies and just good practice more than anything else is that we compile the statistics for the year and we take a look at them and compare to previous years and find out where we're hitting the mark, where we're missing the mark, what we can do better, and just totally reevaluate, have an honest conversation with ourselves about where we're at and what we're doing. Now, this isn't the only time we do this, but when you have those total numbers, it really puts it in perspective for a year-by-year basis. And so that's what I was busy doing in January with the help of a lot of other people in the agency who compiled those numbers for me. We obviously took 23,922 calls for service, which is the most that we've ever taken in our department's history. And we did that with short staffing. We hired 7 total officers in the year of 2022. And only 3 of those are up and running and out on the road. So we did that with a really short staff. But what I'm proud about more than anything else is our use of force numbers and our officer complaints numbers. Because when you're running that short of staff, you're running a lot of overtime. You're burning people out. People are tired. And that's when complaints usually try to rise. We only received 2 officer complaints throughout the entire year. And it's remarkable to me that when we take that many calls for service, our individual employees are working that many hours that we're only receiving 2 complaints. I would have rather had 0, but at the same time, we only received 2. One of which I shipped out to the Oregon State Police to take a look at, and they determined that it was unfounded. One of which we looked at internally, and we determined that there was no policies violated. So basically, both of them were unfounded complaints, which I'm even more proud of. But at the same time, we're always going to have complaints. We're in the business, you know, that we deal with people that are highly emotional and don't like the decisions that we make. So yes, we do field complaints. But we only received 2 last year out of those 23,922 calls for service. So that's pretty remarkable to me. And I definitely commend the personnel at the Pendleton Police Department for being highly professional more than anything else. Additionally, it was use of force numbers. Again, out of the 23,922 calls for services that we took, we generated 60 use of force reports out of 54 total use of force incidents, or 0.002% of our police contacts resulted in a use of force. And so, again, I'm really happy about that. You want to look at the national trend and all of that. I would say that we're definitely beyond the curve on that, which means our officers are taking their training to heart, are taking the time to communicate more, are taking the time to evaluate the totality of the incident and decide whether force is reasonable or not. And so I'm very proud of what they've done. We've evaluated all of those use of force reports, and they are all within scope and policy and did not violate the law. So I'm proud of that as well.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And we're going to take our first break. We're going to come back talking this morning with Pendleton Police Chief Chuck Byram. We'll be right back.
It's that time of year again, and we're here to make sure you are winter ready. Hi, Scott here with Pendleton Tire and Auto, your hometown headquarters for winter driving. Nelke and Mitchell and BF Goodrich, Falkland and Hancock, we have your winter tire needs covered. Our shop is ready to ensure your vehicle is ready for the snow and freezing temperatures. Batteries, brakes, heating, wipers, shocks, and charging systems. Stop by for a free inspection, and we'll be sure you're safe out there on the winter roads. Please always be sure your windows are free of ice and snow. Slow down and arrive safe. Pendleton Tire and Auto, Eastgate Pendleton, 276-2774.
Working on the RV this winter? Zimmerman & Company True Value has the supplies you need. Here is Jeff to tell you more.
Zimmerman carries a fairly large selection of RV supplies for common needs of repair parts, faucets, electrical, and we also have a large selection of sump pumps.
Open 7 days a week, Zimmerman & Company True Value, a mainstay on Main Street for over 80 years in downtown Pendleton.
Winter weather and extreme cold can mean problems for your pipes. When daytime temperatures are 32 degrees or lower, leave cold water slowly dripping from a faucet to keep water moving. If a sink is against an outside wall, insulate the wall and open cabinets to let warm air reach the pipes. Outside your home, clear out and shut down underground sprinklers, cover faucets, and disconnect hoses. Be proactive and prevent the misery and expense of frozen water pipes. This message from the City of Pendleton.
Now Now that cold weather is here, Burns Mortuary of Pendleton would like to remind you to check on elderly loved ones, friends, and neighbors. A visit and a warm drink can go a long way in making sure they're okay in these chilly days. This friendly winter reminder is brought to you by Burns Mortuary of Pendleton, helping families cope with the loss of a loved one for over 90 years.
The Pendleton Market 76, your hometown all-American store, is proud to be part of this great community and part of the greatest country on the face of the earth. We stand up when we hear the national anthem, put our hands on our hearts when we recite the Pledge of Allegiance, and we thank God for everything He has given us. If you feel the same way, stop by and say hi to your neighbors at the Pendleton Market 76, your hometown all-American store. God bless America, God bless you, and God bless beer.
Let's get back to more live and local news from the KUMA Coffee Hour on News Radio FM 96.5, 1290 KUMA.
Back this morning with Pendleton Police Chief Chuck Byram. And Chief, you wanted to talk some more about recent crimes or trends in crime that you have recently noticed.
Yeah, and part of that evaluation that I do at the end of the year is I definitely look at the crimes and see what's risen, what's fallen, and I'm more looking at the stuff that's rising than falling, because that's what I need to pay attention to more than anything, and find out how we can develop a plan and attack the reasons why those numbers are elevating. In this case, I found a couple that were quite disturbing, but I think that it predictable based on ballot measure 110 is thefts, trespass, criminal mischiefs. All of those rose drastically to the tune of thefts. We had 400 and something last year to the tune of 700 and something this year. That is, you know, almost double, 80% increase, basically. And it just goes back to whenever we deal with somebody who's trespassing, whenever we deal with somebody that is stealing something, you're going to find it at the confluence of mental health, addiction, and homelessness. And 9.9 times out of 10, that's the case. There's always those outliers, but more likely than not, we're dealing with one of those three people or a combination involved with those individuals. So it's something that's not healthy that we have to tackle. I feel terrible for our businesses that have to put up with it on the daily. We're getting called constantly to various businesses because of people either just loitering, not doing anything, stealing, or looking like they're about ready to steal, according to those business owners, and they want them out of their property. So that's something that as long as ballot measure 110 is in effect and we're state sanctioning addiction, I don't foresee that changing anytime soon. But I just know that we're going to respond to every single one of those, and we're going to take the most appropriate action that we can.
And as people wait for the courts to determine the fate of Oregon's new gun control laws, how is the effort going to establish a permitting program that includes training?
Well, you know, there's a lot of questions out there. We in law enforcement have questions just based on the way the bill is written. And there's so much room for interpretation and all of that. We're waiting for the Department of Justice to answer questions that we have about what it's going to look like, especially when it comes to ADA compliance. Because just because you can't shoot a gun because you have some type of disability doesn't mean you can't own a gun. And so what happens? How do these individuals demonstrate their use and knowledge of a weapon if they can't handle it? So does that automatically disqualify them? Because then you have ADA issues. That's one of the things that we're waiting on. I know that the Oregon State Police is working hard. So is the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police and the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. The Oregon State Sheriff's Association has tweaked their concealed handgun curriculum, for lack of a better term, to meet the standards of the training required by ballot measure 114, and that's online, that's on their website. So I think it's getting close, but there's still questions that have to be answered. There's still stuff tied up in court about the constitutionality of all of this, and we're just in a wait and see mode now to where we're at. We have the forms developed, we think we have the training, we think we have the stuff down, but we need questions answered, and we need to find out where this is going in the court system before we can adjust to what we're doing.
And while the Oregon State Police is charged with establishing the permitting process, whose shoulders do you feel the training piece will fall onto?
Well, mostly probably law enforcement agencies if they choose to do it, or there's a niche market out there now, I guess, more than anything for gun enthusiasts, gun dealers, shop owners that maybe want to get into that and put on those programs. So that might be something that I know that that's what the committee was looking into, whether gauging the interest of those and whether that's even permissible. So it's how the bill is written. It has to be law enforcement approved, so to speak. And so it's what is law enforcement approved mean? So all these definitions that we need to know about that are not in the bill that should be in the bill. And so we want to make sure that we're providing the service that is out there by the bill that has passed by the voters if it's deemed to be constitutional. We don't want to take people's rights away. So that's what we're working on. The constitutionality part of it, that's in the courts. That's for the lawyers. And we have to comply with whatever comes out of that.
We noticed recently that an RV parked over at Adventure Trails has moved on after a long stay. What can the police do to keep people from just parking on the street and taking up residence without permission?
Well, you know, it hasn't moved very far. It's only moved a couple hundred yards up the roadway, and it's parked right now on a little side road, still within inside the city limits. However, the jacks are down, the doors are locked. We can't get anybody to answer the door, so we're working with that before we have to make a hard decision on how we're going to get that RV out of there. But that just goes back to why we are revamping our ordinances. The RV ordinance, abandoned vehicle ordinance, all of that had the 14 days on them, meaning that we couldn't do anything until 14 days after we tagged them to get them out of there. And so this is one of those instances where it keeps moving it around. And so then the 14 days starts over again. So the ordinance that is being rewritten is only allowing for 72 hours, and then it's gone. I think that's a fair number. There's also stuff in that ordinance that allows for people in residential areas with permissions of their neighbors, as well as me and or the city manager, to keep it down there for longer. Because again, we don't want to unduly punish those that are actually living, working, paying taxes, who have RVs that need to keep them in front of their house for a few days in order to get stuff loaded up for camping, get out of there, come back, unload them, you know, and then, you know, life happens and you can't get back to it for another week or so, whatever. We don't want to unduly punish those folks. However, what we want to do is we want to ensure that the people that are just here to camp, live, not provide anything in this community, to make sure that they're abiding by the law and not harassing and or annoying those who are following the rules. And so we want to make sure that it's fair across the board for people, and that we're not targeting people, but we also want to make sure that people are following the rules.
All right. Fair enough. We are talking this morning to Pendleton Police Chief Chuck Byram. We're going to take another break. Back with more. Stay with us.
Check out our archives, podcasts of past KUMA coffee hours, online at mycolumbiabasin.com.
These high gas prices are affecting all of us. Letter Bus Transit is trying to help reduce your fuel bills by having bus routes run 11 times per day to over 20 bus stops conveniently located throughout the city. You can even save going to the grocery store because they have stop at Walmart every 50 minutes. Their handy mobile app lets you track your bus in real time so you don't waste time. So start saving money today and Letter Bus. For more information, go to the City of Pendleton website.
Looking to the future and developing a plan most times is lost or set aside because of the hustle and bustle of your daily life. Michael Stratton with Stratton Insurance talks about the true versatility of today's life insurance choices.
Yeah, I mean, life insurance can be, you know, purchased for a period of time or for a lifetime. It depends on the goals of the individual. Life insurance also does not have to be purchased for personal reasons. I think a lot of times people miss the value of life insurance for a business or a farm or a ranch. And life insurance can deliver a death-free benefit to help pay transitional costs, estate costs, and taxes. There's products today that will accelerate 40 to 80% of your benefit to you. It's tax-free, in your hand, spend it any way as you want while you're still living.
Stratton Insurance, one responsible source. Follow us on Facebook, see us in Pendleton, Hermiston, LeGrand, The Dalles, and online at stratton-insurance.com.
Heritage Station Museum is closed for the season, but you can still support the Umatilla County Historical Society in many ways. Shop at the Community Thrift Shop on Court Street, where all proceeds benefit UCHS. Or visit heritagestationmuseum.org, and you can become a member, even make a donation right through the website. Follow Heritage Station Museum on Facebook and Instagram for the spring opening date and for upcoming events. Heritage Station Museum, telling the story.
The Old West atmosphere of Hamley Steakhouse and Saloon sets the scene for an amazing dining experience. Whether it's for a special occasion or no occasion at all, you will have a memorable evening enjoying USDA prime cut steaks or a wide assortment of delicious ranch-style menu items. Opens at 5 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday. Hamley Steakhouse and Saloon on the corner of Main and Court, downtown Pendleton.
Pendleton Original. It's the KUMA Coffee Hour. And now back to your host on News Radio FM 96.5, 1290 KUMA.
Back on a Tuesday morning with Pendleton Police Chief Chuck Byram. And Chief, from 10:30 to 1:30 today, there's a car seat check at Walmart. What is the most common mistake people make when attempting to secure a car seat?
Well, I probably just not following manufacturer's suggestions, I would assume. I just remember being a new dad myself and trying to install that thing for the first time and trying to make sure that everything's secure, because I was worried. And breaking out the manual and reading that and not just thinking I knew everything. So I think that's the biggest thing. But good on Walmart in sponsoring that event. Again, it just goes back to show that, you know, Walmart's a good community partner. They have been with us. They really do care about this community, and they're involved in a lot of things. And this is just one of them. So, you know, it's good to have a community partner like that that's concerned about a variety of different aspects within our community. And Walmart is definitely that community partner.
What are the laws about how long a child should use a car seat?
Well, it varies. I even had to look that up because it's been so long since I've enforced anything like that, sitting behind a desk and looking at numbers all day, basically. But again, from birth to age two, you need the rear-facing car seat. Up to 2 years and at least 40 pounds, you can do the rear or the regular facing child safety seat. Booster seat, ages 4 to at least age 8, and then 8 plus years is a regular seat belt. That's the numbers that are followed by the state of Oregon. You can go onto the state of Oregon website and you can find all of that information. That's where I went to make sure that I knew what I was talking about when I was asked that question.
All right. And we keep seeing reports primarily out of Eastern and Central Washington about people younger than 18 committing serious crimes. Is that a trend that we here should be worrying about?
Well, we should always worry about it because, again, you want to get to juvenile crime as soon as you can so you can nip it in the bud so that it doesn't become their livelihood going forward. And I know that based on my experience for 23 plus years in this job, is usually every summer, there's a group of kids coming out of middle school into high school or around that age that identify themselves to us that are going to be our issues for the next few years until they turn 18. We try to intervene into that, and we try to get the juvenile department to intervene into that. It's just really hard sometimes because there's not a whole lot of control anymore due to the juvenile system and how it's constructed in the state. Usually it takes a lot and lot of work and more likely than not a serious offense before anybody will intervene. To me, that seems a little bit backwards, that you want to intervene early and establish with that individual that the behaviors that they are demonstrating right now are only going to get worse and it's not acceptable right now and stop it right now. However, that doesn't seem to be where we're at. Fortunately for us right now, we do not have too much of that. But it can crop up at any time, and it's always a concern of ours.
And where do you think it stems from?
You know, it stems from a lot of things. I mean, it just goes back to if anybody really had that answer, they could probably make a lot of money because they would be able to resolve the issue. It's home life. It's the individual child. It's free will. It's learned behavior. It's drugs and alcohol. It's friends. There's a whole bunch of influences that dictate that. But it's definitely hard, I know based on experience in this job, to beat what's going on in the home because they have the most contact with the child. It starts in the home, and it starts in the home.
And then how can it be stopped? Just don't tolerate it?
Well, I.
Well, it's more than that.
It's definitely more than that. I mean, again, it's intervening early, in my opinion, and it's getting the child and the parents tools in which to cope with this behavior and try to change that behavior. It doesn't mean it's going to work, but it's the early intervention, and that's why our school counselors do such a great job. That's why our school resource officer goes out and creates all those trust with the children and creates those relationships, and so we can try to head that off before it even starts. Talks to the parents, gets parents involved with DHS, gets them involved with mental health services, all of that stuff to try to change behaviors before they get too bad.
And there are ways people can help prevent crime. Talk about registering front porch cameras and other things they can do.
Well, I think, you know, when I first started talking today, I talked about a great way that people can help prevent crime is if you see something, say something, you know, and that was a great example of that. That resident down there in the 400 block of Southwest Haley Avenue did not have to call the police just because somebody was running away from a car. Really didn't, but that individual thought that they did, and I definitely applaud them for it. And if it turns out to be nothing, it's nothing. That's fine. You wasted five minutes of our day. It's not really a waste because that's what we do. That's what you pay us to do. You can go on our website, go to Crime Graphics tab. You can register your Ring doorbell with us. You can also look on the Crime Graphics, and you can get our daily blotter about what we're doing. You can look at warrants, people that are wanted, stuff like that. And so that really helps us. If you stay informed and you stay on top of it, and you get a hold of us and let us know what's going on in your neighborhood that you don't think is right, one way or another, we are going to try to address it. Whether we can address it or not is not 100%, because what some people think is a crime or a nuisance sometimes just isn't. Sometimes it's just people being people, and there's nothing that we can do to regulate that. But we will definitely come, and we will look at it, and we will do our best to try to resolve the issues before they become big issues. That's what we want to try to resolve.
And last question, I just wanted to ask you quickly, how are things with staffing?
Well, staffing, we're still working on it. We got Officer Liloff in uniform now. She's out there rolling around with FTO before she goes to the academy, I believe, in March. We have one going in April, and then I think one in May. So we'll have all three of those. We have four positions to hire. Two have to be recruit officers for the grant position that I received, and two can be either recruit officers or lateral officers. Unfortunately, I just received yesterday a resignation notice from one of my officers who's transferring over to OSP for a better work-life balance. And again, can't begrudge him for doing that. That seems to be what works best for him in his life. And I'm looking to hire four right now. And anybody that wants to come work for me, I'm looking at all applications, and I will get you set up with the testing.
All right. Fair enough. Well, thank you for your time this morning. Been talking with Pendleton Police Chief Chuck Byram, and that's going to do it for this edition of the KUMA Coffee Hour. We'll talk to you again next month. And with that, I wish everybody a terrific Tuesday. We'll be back again tomorrow.
For local news, sports, and weather. News Radio FM 96.5, 1290 KUMA, Pendleton.